the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Please be seated. Today's gospel drops us into the middle of Jesus' conversation with Nicodemus, as described in chapter 3 of the Gospel of John. If you think back a few months in the lectionary, you might recall how that encounter begins. Nicodemus, who's a religious leader and a Pharisee, he's come under cover of darkness at nighttime to see Jesus. Perhaps he had heard something about Jesus that stirred his soul. Perhaps he was just curious. Or maybe he even saw it as part of his duties in his leadership role to investigate this new religious phenomenon. But Jesus holds nothing back from Nicodemus. He tells him that it's necessary to be born again, or born from above is another possible translation. And Nicodemus famously asks him, can someone enter again into his mother's womb and be born a second time? Jesus continues with the discussion, you'll recall, of comparing the spirit to the wind that blows wherever it chooses. And then Nicodemus is again uncomprehending and incredulous, asking, how can these things be? And Jesus replies, you are a teacher of Israel, and yet you do not understand. Whether Jesus says this with scorn or frustration or sadness, we're not told. And then Jesus delivers our text for today. He reveals to Nicodemus his identity and his mission, how he will bring light and life to the world by being lifted up on the cross. And the cross, like the serpent that Moses raised in the wilderness, a symbol of death and sickness and pain, is transformed into a symbol of life. But we hear no more from Nicodemus at that point. He asks no more questions. Whatever his purpose in coming, he must have pondered Jesus' words in his heart as he walked home that night. And recall that Nicodemus is a man with power, a man with influence, a man with high social standing. He's come to see Jesus in secret, and we can assume that he did not disclose that meeting to his colleagues on the council. Because when we meet Nicodemus again in chapter 7, he's participating in a discussion or a debate with the other members of the council about Jesus' activities and what should be done about Jesus. Other members of the council are saying, arrest him now, he needs to be arrested. And Nicodemus responds by saying that under our law, Jesus is entitled to a hearing, or as we would say here in America, to due process. And when he says this, he's met with scorn. Another member of the council says, are you also a Galilean? Do you know that no prophet can come from the Galilee? And I would suggest his colleagues in this discussion show no awareness of that night meeting he had had with Jesus. Finally, Nicodemus comes after Jesus' death. This is the last time we see him in the Gospel of John. He comes with Joseph of Arimathea, bearing 100 pounds of spices to anoint Jesus' body. And I'm not sure if this was the intent, but that seems like an awful lot. It almost seems like he's trying to make up for something, or he feels guilty about something. It seems like a lot more than was needed for the purpose. So that's it for Nicodemus in the Gospel of John. But in later Christian tradition, this kind of ambiguous figure was seen as a secret disciple. Later generations of Christians regarded him as a disciple of Jesus, and he was venerated for it. In the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox churches, Nicodemus is a saint. And reverence for him was carried down through the centuries to the Renaissance. There's a famous sculpture by Michelangelo of Jesus being taken off the cross. And Nicodemus is there with Jesus' mother and the beloved disciple, which is not in the gospel. So whether or not he can actually be considered a disciple of Jesus, he is, along with Joseph of Arimathea, an important figure to be aware of when we're combating or opposing anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish readings of the Gospel of John. Because though he's a Pharisee and a member of the Sanhedrin, he's at the very least sympathetic. He's a sympathetic inquirer. I'm not convinced he's a secret disciple, but at the very least a sympathetic inquirer, someone who seeks to understand Jesus and argues for his fair treatment. But as I noted a moment ago, he's also, for me, a complicated and ambiguous character, and has been in the history of our tradition as well. During the religious wars in Europe that followed the Protestant Reformation, the name Nicodemus was an insult that Protestants used. If they thought you were a secret Catholic, they would call you a Nicodemus, because it came to mean somebody who professed one faith outwardly and held something else in their heart. So it was actually an epithet, an insult. It's also complicated that he comes to Jesus at night. Now, this is self-protection on his part. He's a member of the council. He probably didn't want anybody to see him talking to Jesus. But it's also highly symbolic, because remember that theme in John that goes all the way back to the prologue we heard around Christmas time? In the beginning was the Word, and there's talk about the light coming into the world and the darkness not overcoming it. And then in today's gospel, the theme of light and dark is continued, where Jesus is talking about people loving darkness, those who do evil hate the light and do not come into the light. Well, at least in chapter 3, Nicodemus hasn't come into the light. He's come to see Jesus in the dark and leaves the same way, as far as we are told. Nicodemus hears Jesus' identity and mission, but he holds himself back. He doesn't give himself to Jesus then and there. Even if you've seen Nicodemus as a sincere seeker after truth, there's also, I think, a tragic element to his character. So he has this important place in society, and the power and the status. And to preserve that power and that status, he passes up the chance to be a disciple of Jesus, to accompany Jesus, to learn and grow in the presence of Jesus. By the time Nicodemus shows up with the spices, it's too late. And as I prepared these remarks, I thought to myself about my own Nicodemus moments. And one that stood out for me, and I hadn't thought about it in quite a while. And that's one of the nice things about sermon preparation, because it's a great way to do a spiritual reflection as well. So I thought about all the way back to college 40 years ago. I had a spiritual director, and I suspect she thought that I was a little indecisive, a little hesitant, maybe not fully committed. And she recommended that after I graduated, that I get involved with LARCH. Now that's LARCHE. Some of y'all may be familiar with it. It's a movement that was founded in France in the early 60s that forms communities of individuals with intellectual disabilities living together with individuals without, who are not living with intellectual disabilities. They live together as equals in a community. It's not a caregiver, caregiving situation. You live together in a community. It's quite radical at the time when this idea came about. Most folks with intellectual disabilities were still basically confined in state institutions. There are large communities to this day in Canada, in the U.S., and in Europe. And I could have done that. I had no mortgage. I had no car payment. I had no car insurance. At that time, I had very few responsibilities. And it would have been the perfect time in my life to make a radical choice, to take a chance, to do something out of the ordinary. And I thought about it, and I didn't do it. I did not do it. I was held back by what I thought my place in life required of me. My parents were professional people. My siblings were professional people. I felt that there was a certain path I had to follow in life. And joining L'Arche or joining a L'Arche community just seemed too radical to me at the time, too nonconformist. And I've regretted it. And I think I missed an opportunity 40 years ago for great spiritual growth and satisfaction. Now, I'm not asking you to beat yourselves up over your Nicodemus moments, your missed opportunities for service and growth. And I'm not trying to beat up on Nicodemus either. In his time and place and circumstance, he may have thought he was doing the best he could in doing what he did. But I do have a homework assignment. And it's completely voluntary. There will be no test. And I'll never know whether you did it or not. But take a look at the next encounter that Jesus has after that nighttime interview with Nicodemus. It's in chapter 4, so this Nicodemus is chapter 3. In chapter 4 is the encounter with the Samaritan woman at Jacob's well. And pay attention to her response to Jesus, well, to her entire interaction. So whereas Nicodemus, Jesus will say something, Nicodemus kind of goes, I don't know what the heck you're talking about. The Samaritan woman engages in a kind of Socratic dialogue with Jesus and begins to kind of figure him out, at least figure out there's something special here. And then she goes and becomes, I think, the first evangelist. The Samaritan woman goes and tells everybody else in her community about Jesus. So she's able to seize that moment, and she doesn't hold herself back, unlike Nicodemus. So I would ask you to do your homework, and when you do, I think you'll see that the Samaritan woman, I think, is an example that we can all follow.